This is a download from the BBC. For more information and our terms of use, go to bbc.co.uk/radio3.
At the centre of my education and training as a director was an immersion in Renaissance literature, mostly Italian Renaissance literature. You know, Petrarch's Ascent of Mont Ventoux and Castiglione's Book of the Courtier, alongside Dante's Divine Comedy. These were my guides, that Renaissance longing for new ways of seeing a human being in relation to God, and the perfect path for building an interest in metaphoric expression and a thirst for worlds of the imagination, all of which grasped somehow at transcendence. For no matter what anybody tells you, that is what people seek when they immerse themselves in any kind of aesthetic experience. They want out, or up, or somehow through and into another world. They want to transcend, to be taken into the subconscious where the rules are different, and where we can be released into other parts of ourselves or our being. Perhaps it's some kind of group meditative exercise or a bacchic, ecstatic experience. But that deep joy which comes from a great Shakespearean tragedy, or Verdi, or Rodgers and Hammerstein, or Beethoven, or Radiohead, or Pina Bausch, or whatever, it all adds up to the same longing, the same desire to experience in the substructure of who we are something deeper, something more resonant, or something just plain more. As a young man, my favorite of those Renaissance authors was Edmund Spenser, particularly his strange and allegorical work, The Faerie Queen. Here was an author striving to invent the greatest expression of his age, epic poetry, and building a world of bowers and caves and damsels and knights, all strung together by weirdly rhymed nine-line stanzas. Something about the lonely knight wandering into the wood and being tempted or drawn into personal and spiritual danger was not only hugely comforting as an allegory for a human being in personal struggle, but also hugely comforting to me as a director. In one of his lines, while we follow our hero, Red Cross Knight, into yet another detour where his soul will be tested, I found the one phrase I have frequently returned to and that I have always believed best captured the work I do as a director. This strange passage describes a tree, the maple seldom inward sound. And this captures it, really, in several ways. For my entire job as a director is the search for and unveiling of inward sound, that deeper rhythm found in any text or piece of music, that thing that pulls you under or out of yourself and into your subconscious. It's reminiscent of religious traditions, say the sacrament of confirmation in Catholicism, where the local bishop comes around to ritually slap all the young men and women as they enter adulthood, thus waking them up into the world. Josh Logan, the great director of musicals, plays, and films, including the original stage production of South Pacific, used to be able to identify when a new work would, as he called it, click with an audience. And by this he meant the moment the audience coalesced, gave in, trusted, or were pulled under into the deeper rhythm of the piece. Perhaps he was, in his way, identifying its inward sound, or perhaps he was looking for the moment he could metaphorically slap the audience to wake up into the world of the play. The pure craft of directing and the analogous world of conducting share this pursuit in our work. We long to find the right tempo. And anyone who works in this art will tell you that tempo is the most subtle, the most complex, and the most important part of what we do with a large and integrated work of art. But what is this rhythm when it comes to a plastic art such as theater, where the canvas is in motion, and where the materials are human bodies and spoken language and transformative physical spaces? A director always finds himself working on several levels to integrate all of this into a larger whole. It's an intuitive and intellectual task, but it's mostly integrating many elements into a painstaking assemblage of details, of layering, of building up, as it were, to a place where ultimately the smallest adjustment resonates deeply inside the structure of the piece. Any piece of theater has easily discernible rhythms. First is the overall rhythm of the theater piece, how it moves in a large arc from exposition to complication to a place where it lifts off. One can know dimly where the liftoff point of that rhythm is at the beginning of rehearsal. And generally, when I read a script for the first time, I can sense where a show will deepen, but only dimly. So the process of rehearsal is the organizing of all the elements from the design to the acting to allow the director to search for and build and, yes, release this grand and powerful rhythm. Often, beginning directors will construct shows where the design requires blackouts and extensive changes to get from one scene to the next, and forget it. That director is sunk before he or she starts. As a design must possess a fluidity. This is not new. Shakespeare's Globe was the perfect design, with its limitless ability to shift from inner above to below, and this allowed for an effortless sense of transition. Second, a director has to build, and this is a very slow process, each individual rhythm of each actor and each scene. The relationship of a director to a group of actors is the complex negotiation of many stories into one over the course of an event or an arc of action that is the play. Each individual moment or event must be explored and tied together through scenes. But we start moment to moment, and an actor in his or her own way is building a mechanism to experience his character in these events. For example, I may often find myself having trouble with one particular scene in a play, and often the problem may not have anything to do with that scene at all. I always have to ask, where in the previous scenes leading to my trouble have I made any error in tone, in subtext, in an individual moment or building block, that could, because it is missing early, be making the scene we are having trouble with not release? Third is rhythm to be found in transition from scene to scene. As a director always needs to ask what happens between what connects a scene. This is no less important in a play or musical or opera, because pieces with music provide musical information about how to get from scene to scene. Yet a director still needs to construct through movement and design a path through transitions that keep a story powering forward. I was lucky enough to work with arguably the finest composer in American musicals, Adam Gettle, on Light in the Piazza, and we had a problem in transition on one critical moment of that piece that occurred late in Act Two. It was where Clara, the young ingenue who had learned something terrible about her past, ran out of the hotel where her mother was, and in the next scene enters to find her fiancé and break off their relationship. Adam and I struggled over that transition because we were unsure how to propel Clara from one scene to the next, and then use the transition to show Clara running through the streets of Florence in her wedding dress. And Adam composed a beautiful piece of music to support this that eventually Kelly O'Hara, who played Clara, not only moved to, but fell to her knees and sang the most heart-wrenching section of the musical, all occurring in transition between the scenes. Finally, there really is for a director a kind of intuition to the work of rhythm, a kind of six-dimensional chess, where as director I have to simultaneously keep an eye on the individual moments and all the larger parts and build slowly as I go along, looking to make changes in either small and critical ways or larger sweeping gestures to build a full production. And because of this instinct or informed intuition for pursuing or searching for that inward sound, I find the task of directing a kind of ongoing activity, a becoming, where I actively build up my capacity to play the piece. Audiences have rhythms too, and in many ways, the work of theater has become the activity of resetting personal rhythms and providing some strange antidote to the experience of contemporary life. For example, any given audience member will enter a theater having spent an entire day juggling several forms of communication, from a computer to a BlackBerry to a television set. We are operating in a state of continual partial awareness, concentrating simultaneously on several layers of our life. To even enter a theater, sit in a dark space, not talk to anybody, shut off a communication device, and suddenly be pulled into a singular rhythm outside of your own is becoming a more and more radical and transformative event. People genuinely struggle through the first 20 minutes of such events. It's like deprogramming, and a new rhythm is available and allowed to the viewer in the form of an 18th century opera, or a play from the 16th century, or even a musical from the 1950s. The rhythm of those times is different, and it acts upon a contemporary person in a radical way. For example, the extraordinary production of War Horse playing in the West End and at Lincoln Center Theater in New York has a wonderful moment early on, and it's a rhythm-transforming event. Joey, as a foal, is just getting to his feet, and the moment is very slow. The literal pace of life is so much slower than in today's London and New York that as he struggles and as the quiet settles in, the audience is unconsciously pulled into both a rural rhythm and the pace of the early 20th century. So that when the horse bursts into movement, the play, as Josh Logan would say, clicks, and we are off into the story from another time, and internally we are recalled to another era where we may even be emotionally able to experience something deeper than what everyday city life offers. Directing is an interpretive art. Unlike creative artists such as painters or writers or composers who invent out of whole cloth, the interpretive artist requires a pre-existing object, a text, that he or she bring to life or unearths. The task is fundamentally different. This pre-existing object, this text, is not really like other objects. It has an immense power, and it is packed with substantial information. So whether it is Shakespeare or a new musical or an opera, the function of the director is to use acting, design, sound, and yes, to uncover the deeper rhythm of this text. Each text has its own laws or its own set of requirements to wrestle with, and there are endless ways of revealing the content of any narrative in the directing process. Perhaps the real beauty of Edmund Spenser's line, "the maple seldom inward sound," is the description of the maple itself, of seldom inward sound, of the very fragility of the tree. Nothing could better describe the situation, the predicament, of directing itself. Like all arts, it's filled with uncertainty and insecurity, that sense of, am I on the right path? The very activity of the artist to find a path or a way into a work is filled with difficulty and challenge. So those Renaissance writers will always be my guides as I investigate the inward sound of a work.